Anyway, one of the main things we can get when we study the Dharma is bridging the gap between what we know in our head and what we know in our heart, or what we feel. And when you think about practice, it's very easy to know what you need to do to some extent. If I ask you all, do you need to meditate? Most of you would say yes. Do you need to meditate more? It's a rare Sangha member who says, no, I meditate all I need to meditate less. I mean, think of it. How many people here would raise their hands like, I'm doing more meditation than I need? And most of you would probably say, yes, I could use meditating more, or I could use more mindfulness, more practice, more perceptual behavior. And the key in training is shifting things from our head into our heart so we actually feel it. Think of coming to the Priory this morning. It's a lot easier when you feel like this is what I need to do. When it's just like, in your head you feel like you need to do it, but you'd rather kind of sit a little longer with that cup of coffee and think, well, I really need to relax more, or whatever it is. And that covers a lot of things in training. It's like somebody can make a mistake and say, that I am really a good person, I have a good heart. But we actually often don't feel that in our heart. We can feel unworthy, unclean, inadequate, and we can tell ourselves, no, I'm not inadequate. But we feel it, and it has a huge impact on us. You know, that's really what we live from. It's what we feel, not what we think. The thoughts actually help us, but in the end, what matters is, you know, kind of what's in our heart. Just like somebody will have difficulty with someone, and it's, you know, and actually it's very hard to solve it unless they can solve it in their heart. It's not going to be solved on the level of, wow, they're a Buddha, or I should treat them well, and all the rest. You actually have to convert the heart so you can actually feel like there's good there. And it's very, so it's a, that's actually what we're trying to convert in training, is actually not just the mind. The mind leads to the heart, but we have to convert. We start with converting the mind, and that leads to converting the heart. Thus, in when our practice, when we're being critical, we're being judgmental, we're being, you know, different things that we know we shouldn't be holding on to, we're holding on to. We have to actually then watch the mind and try to convert. Be still, first of all. What does that mean? It means not continuing that stream of complaints, this flow of, God, this drives me crazy. This is what I need. This is awful. And it's not unusual that we'll, in a way, know. A common thing I can that'll come up is, you know, somebody will say, we'll be really stuck with a situation, and I'll say, it's actually okay. And they'll say, but it's not okay. And they have to kind of start by bringing that thought into their mind that it is okay, and substituting the negative for the, you know, with the positive. Plus, if you're complaining about somebody, not surprisingly, it leaks out. And somebody, the example I always like giving is where I said really the right thing to somebody and they blew up at me. And I went away feeling so self-righteous, because I could just repeat to myself what I had said, and I had said all the right things. And the person then said to me, but I just could look at your face and see you were being critical of me. And I had to kind of think, I was being critical of him. I guess I just hoped it wasn't. It wasn't showing. But that's actually what I had. that's where training really lies, is how do I convert that? How do we convert the part of us that is critical of ourselves, inadequate, despairing, scared? Part of it is to let go of that stream so you can be still. And then when things arise, direct them to the right thing. So it makes a big difference if you stop. It's very hard to be negative to somebody if you haven't been thinking the negative thoughts. And to stop it, you both have to be stiller. And then when the thoughts arise, you have to counteract the complaint with the right thought, you know, and keep directing the heart to the fact that Buddha bows to Buddha. How do we take that into our heart when we meet somebody? When somebody isn't the way we want to be, that's what we have to convert. And it's converted when we actually can feel there's good there. And we drop this judgmental mind. There's good everywhere. Compassion embraces everything. When we hold on to that mind, we keep having, the wheel keeps turning the wrong way. And that's why the real suffering in our life is generally almost always internal. I mean, you can get the extreme external ones, and yes, you can have real problems outside, but for most of us, most of the time, the real problems lie inside. It's that unconverted heart and mind that is plaguing us, and often we're looking to those externals to make us feel good, useful, purposeful, meaningful, whole, and we want those feelings. Yet, you know, when we keep trying to, in life, what we're often trying to do is keep trying to generate a feeling of well-being, of being good, of being whole by remembering something positive, by trying to have something positive happen, doing something that makes you feel good, all those things. And the trouble with it all is it doesn't work. You know, it just, you can't keep doing it. It's like, I can remember, you keep replaying the memory until it becomes dry and tasteless. You keep revisiting, you keep doing something. In the end, it's not going to work. You know, it's almost like if I kept eating these very good biscotti that somebody very nicely gave us yesterday. If I keep eating them, at some point, I'm going to actually realize I don't even like them anymore. Now, that could take a long time. But it would happen. You know, if nothing else, it won't actually make me happy, really, if I look at it. It doesn't really make much difference, the fact that I had a few minutes. And since I eat quick, it's a very short time. And we're always trying to keep that good feeling in us. I mean, that's really what training is about, is we're suffering or uncomfortable on some level. And we want to feel a sense of well-being, a sense of, you know, we want to feel good. Basic human desire. And, you know, that good relationship, that good pet, that good place to live, that good job, good company, good holidays, you know, good possessions. You know, they all create, you know, you buy something nice, you know, think of people shopping. The reason they shop is that they like buying, you know, it makes them feel good. Wow, this is a nice new shirt. See, I don't get that pleasure. You know, very often. Yeah, which I kind of like, but that's kind of, and in a way we keep living almost kind of creating a false reality that we can enjoy dwelling in. You you know, both in good and bad ways, we create that. We have the stuff we want that gives us that warm feeling we're seeking. And then we have all the things that just, I'm like sticking a knife, like the uncomfortable thing, aspects that bother us, frustrate us, and create that other thing, the other side of it. And the thing that ties it all together is this real obsession we have with ourselves. You know, how am I doing? I realized it took me a long time to stop obsessing on how am I doing with training. You know, and it's quite a load because it's a heavy thing to kind of carry around all the time, which is very common, like, almost. Like, and what usually means is you're imagining a reality with a better picture of training that you're trying to do. Yet this, the self, it's funny, although it's so uncomfortable being ourselves to some extent or other for all of us. And if you don't think you're uncomfortable, just think of how easily you are hurt. And if you want to know how easy it is, I can just insult you and you would find you would be hurt. You know, it's not a hard thing for most of us to be hurt. And yet, this story of ourselves, this kind of reality we create, kind of gives us a kind of a permanence that makes us feel grounded and real. Well, often when you're trained, it's a common experience is, in a way, we're losing the ground a little bit because this, you know, we may be miserable, but we know where we are. We know who we are, sort of. And it's uncomfortable, in a way, losing this ground. If I'm not important, then what is? What matters? Yet, the things that make our lives so real are the things that we're actually stuck with. Think of the good that you do that you don't even pay attention to. It doesn't even stick. You know, your mistakes stick, your trying, you know, just think of what really sticks with you. And that's often who you are. You know, there's some things about myself I don't even think very much about. And I realize they don't stick because I don't, you know, it's not a struggle. I don't care. You know, it's just, that's the way things are. I don't care. And really, both these conscious and unconscious places that are stuck is actually what we think of as ourselves. You know, basically, we're fixating on the stuck bits. You know, the stuff that's flowed through our life that we didn't let go. Just think of the past. All this stuff flowed through our past. What leaves? Either the really good bits we're hanging on to. I mean, I can still remember, because I've held on to it deeply, some of our messages, compliments about me. You know, because they meant a lot. So, you know, they're stuck. Because I kind of cling to them. You know, and then some of my mistakes, they're stuck too, because I have trouble letting go of the mistakes. A lot of the other stuff just, you know, went by. Just like often when I do a good job, I don't even notice. You know, it's like there's nothing. You know, it's like if the one person who has a problem with me, it sticks. Well, you know, I can look at it and think, oh, most people aren't having a problem with me. And that doesn't stick. And and part of the practice of meditation in all is becoming clear about what is stuck, what we actually feel, how we're relating to it. So we can actually start going, converting the heart by seeing what is the unconscious, the things that are so stuck that we think that's who we are. You know, one of the liberating things about training is that it doesn't matter who you are. in a way, we'll get far only when we let go of all those stuck bits. That's actually what liberation will be. No more stuck bits. Doesn't mean nothing bothers us, or just like you can bring up the memory, it'll probably still hurt. I can think of some things that'll always hurt me to think about, but I don't have to dwell on it and hold on to it. It's just, that's the karma. Just like Rev Masterji's compliments from me, probably will always be positive. You know, I didn't get that many of them, so she wasn't somebody who went around doing, you know, kind of telling, you know, kind of propping you up by saying, "Wow, you're such a good monk." You know, she didn't do that, so you know, it had a lot of credibility when she said something. So on the other hand, she never said something bad about. I never remember her publicly, you know, saying bad things about anybody either, you know, hardly ever, you know. So it wasn't like she was doing either. She just treated all of it as sort of normal. And when we meditate and train, we're trying to see what the importance of the stuck bits is. Then we can actually relate to what we're actually really feeling and how we're actually experiencing the world. Because that's what we have to convert. Going back to having a problem with somebody, where's the problem coming from? It's actually coming from one of the stuck bits. You know, what's really going on? How can we open our heart to what's there? And when we let go of being stuck, or how we want things to be, or how we think everything should be, or how we think everything is, like ourselves, we often have a very hard and set feeling of who we are. And all those things get in the way. And what we want to do is open our hearts to the Buddha. And when we open, there's really nothing there. You know, all those bits don't matter unless we hold on to it, including the other people's bits. You know, the fact that they're stuck doesn't have to be a problem for you. You know, it's like, oh no, I don't want to be around somebody who is. It's just a stuck Buddha, you know, good heart that's looking the wrong way. And we often don't want to sit still with the stuck bits because it's uncomfortable. You know, let's say we have a feeling of loneliness or inadequacy or fear, or the normal way is when our attention becomes aware of what's uncomfortable, we want to distract ourselves. We don't want to actually recognize those feelings. We don't want to kind of say, God, I, you know, even that, I really don't like that person. You know, you can kind of go, I remember somebody telling me, he's a bad Buddhist, he doesn't like that person. You can feel it, it's okay. You don't have to, you can tell yourself, it's okay to feel it. It's not true, but it's okay to feel it. And that if I sit still, the real feeling will be there. The real harmony with what's there is there. When we're not demanding anything, we're in harmony with things. When we demand things, we're not in harmony. It's as simple as that. We sometimes can get harmony because our demands can be in harmony with other demands. You know, and that's often what makes a good relationship. Our stuck bits are in harmony. You know, it's like, I'm willing to put up with this in you and see the good there. You're willing to put up with this in me. You know, kind of like. And often if we're not training well with it, we can be overwhelmed by different perceptions and feelings. We can get lost in grief, inadequacy, despair, you know, anger. And we can have a sense of powerlessness that, how do I deal with this? You know, and the image of the Buddha, I always like, yet if you sit still and just face reality, you can find and see what is true. And the image, an image the Buddha had, there's a famous story of the Buddha, of a woman coming up to the Buddha who was consumed with grief because she lost her baby. And she just couldn't let go of the grief. And I've actually experienced this very situation, you know, of people who've had a loss like that. And actually, a lost child is one of those things that people can't, you know, sometimes are just filled with it, can't let it go. So what the Buddha did is he told her in a very famous story, all you have to do to free yourself of this problem is get a mustard seed from some house, but it has to be from a house where nobody has died. This is ancient India. It would have to be very new construction. So she went from house to house, and every house would tell her about death and tell her about death until finally it came into her that nothing's really going, you know, that this is kind of normal and that it's, in a way, it's okay. It's everywhere. And just to see it for what it is rather than, God, how could this happen to me? And see, it's happening all around. How, why nothing really special is going on. It's kind of, this is just the way things are. And had a realization from it. And an image, you know, that they've used in Buddhism is we're all carrying around dead babies. You know, we're all not wanting to face reality and holding on to our stuck bits. You know, she was stuck with kind of thinking, this isn't the way things should be. Almost like we can think it about other people. Why somebody like that? When if you just went around, you know, who are these people? Sometimes I'll look at complaints about, you know, I'll read about spiritual teachers and all the rest, and you know, people kind of going and I kind of think, let them find the spiritual teacher who isn't this kind of perfect being without flaws that people often kind of think you should be. And I think, you know, it's like they should go around like that mustard seed. Go from place to place. Find the place that's the way you think it should be. And you'll actually eventually recognize it doesn't exist. This is this reality. And you know, and that's you know, in the image of like the woman's dead babies, it's just a dramatic stuck bit. But we're all stuck on things. Who we are, how we should be, how the world should be, what we need to do. And, you know, and you have to realize flowing from this holding on to who we are and what happens to us is also a lack of acceptance of how things are, a wanting for a different reality, just like the woman. I want a reality in which my baby doesn't die. In a world where half the babies, you know, infant mortality used to be, until 100 years ago, it was almost 50%. You know, it wasn't. You know, it was very high before modern medicine. So actually having, you know, yeah, you can still see if you're a mother how painful that would be. It's understandable karma, just like all our karma is understandable. But how do we free ourselves from it? You know, and just to kind of, we all want to, when we look at reality, we all want to feel good right now. Nobody's saying, no, I want a few more years of being really uncomfortable. I mean, you're willing to do that if that's the best deal you can get, which is really what I'm... But it's not like it's what you want. Yet, you have to just accept, you know, and be willing to feel our karma, feel what's going on, feel the sense of helplessness that we often have, and trust that it's not real. And keep directing the mind and the heart to the right direction, and realizing this is just the arising of karma. And if I train with it, it'll go away. You know, Think of how nice it would be to let go of all this stuff. Think of how nice it would be not to feel bound. Well, you have to be willing to feel bound and see what's really what's going on there, and then you can free yourself. Because in a way, the whole purpose of meditation and the practice is creating some space around the karma, around the experience. So instead of being trapped in it, we can just see it. Oh, this is just another thing. This is just ordinary life. You know, this is what happens. I look around, it's babies die everywhere. There's nothing really special. Even why 12, all those support groups help. People think, how could this have happened? How could I be with, let's say, have an alcoholic family member? You talk to everyone else with alcoholic family members, and suddenly you feel like, oh, what I'm experiencing is normal. You know, of course I'm having trouble with this, and I'm having this feeling, this experience, and you know how to let go. And the absence of space around the stuck bits, the feeling of being trapped, of fixating on it, obsessing, is a sign of what you need to convert, sign of where you need to train. And the more you train, the more there's a sense of openness around it. And actually, if you think, all of you think of the fact before you trained and now, I bet you all have more of a sense of openness about when you hit a lot of situations that you didn't have before you practiced, you know, of not being so trapped with the karma. And even think of how sometimes feeling of freedom it gets just to meditate and not to be holding on to something so firmly. Because that's one thing that you're doing in meditation. In a way, you're seeing it arise and pass. Because if you sit there in meditation and it never passes, you should come talk to me. You know, you're really supposed to be working at letting go of it. If you sit there the whole time complaining about somebody, you know, you need to work on your meditation practice. You should be letting go of it. It may pop right back, but you're still letting go of it constantly, which does create more space around it. Because the absence of space is one of the signs of attachment. Whenever you feel trapped, held down, whenever suffering is bad, there's a lack of space around it. You feel you're stuck. You know, not just stuck bits, it's a whole you stuck. You know, I can't put up with this. I don't want to be here. Nothing's more stuck than not wanting to be here. And think of how more stuck it is when you don't want to be you. It's very hard to solve that. And part of it is to solve it is realizing, you know, trusting there really isn't anything solid there. You know, and that's why from the point of view of training, whatever difficulty problem we face is secondary. The real problem is that when the karma flows into us, it's getting stuck. That's the problem. Naturally, at times, if we can stop it, you know, if I can stop somebody's anger from flowing into me, I'd appreciate it. If I can stop bad health flowing into me, I'd appreciate it. But the real problem is when I get stuck with it. Because often I can't stop it, you know. I'll walk out on the street and somebody will get angry. I'll meet somebody and they'll have a problem. And that's why if we really looked at our lives, think of how many times we felt overwhelmed, hopeless, inadequate. Yet think of it. It flowed away at some point. It was just a feeling that came up. It's not like there's something solid. It just meant that for a while you were stuck with it. And usually any intense thing doesn't stay that way because it actually takes too much energy almost. You know, it kind of can't stand in the flow of reality, which is that it's not really reality. So eventually it washes down unless we hold on to it for dear life, which like the woman with the dead baby did. No matter what changed, my baby is dead. You know, woke up in the morning probably, went to sleep at night with that thought. Naturally wouldn't go away. And in a way, we're trying to trust it for training. In a way, nothing is really going on. Elbow her a little bit. Elbow her. I wonder what that laughter is on the tape. I don't want too much snoring on the tape, so I asked her to elbow.
I know, I heard it. Thank you.
Sure. Since you can understand my rudeness. Think of it. In a way, one way of seeing what's stuck is that in a way we're always looking for something. Something we need, something we want, something that'll make us all right, something going on. And have you ever found it? You know, it's kind of like, have you ever found the mustard seed from the house that death didn't come to? You know, find what, you know, that somehow, you know, not seeing that you're just stuck. And, you know, that's what we're trying to trust. We're trying to trust and kind of redirect the mind back to what's really important. Back to kind of the Dharma when karma comes up. Back to being still and not feeling like we have to react and letting go of the critical mind, the judgmental mind, the fearful mind. The mind that actually just dwells in the stuck bits. Just think of walking down the street. Often what you're walking with is stuck bits. You wake up with stuck bits, go to sleep with stuck bits.
That'd be a great name for a dog.
Stuck bits. Anyway, any comments? Good karma. So some biscotti left. Anybody have any stuck bits?
Yeah, I do. Right now, my oldest brother is dying, and his son is in charge of everything and is not willing to give us medical information about him. And I'm feeling angry at him, and I feel very stuck with that.
Yeah, well, you know, have compassion for yourself. That's one thing. So you're not being upset. Yeah, I mean, we compound it by being upset with ourselves for being angry and all the rest. But also realize people find things, you know, we all are going through different things, and to kind of, and actually it never helps anything to be angry with the person, and you know, and just try to have compassion and do your best with it, and try to, you know, let it go, because in a way we just compound suffering by us suffering about what somebody else is doing, because, and there's always cause to find, you know, it's like a lot of people just look for reasons to be upset, and yeah, and just keep letting it go and be willing to feel it and trust that, you know, it is what it is. You know, even if something isn't going well, which has happened, you know, situations where somebody actually isn't even getting the right treatment, and you have to just realize that is what it is. You have to let it go. It's not going to help you to keep being upset about the fact that something isn't going well. That people are making poor choices often, which people frequently do, which we do some. Anybody else have
is more of a comment than relating to my particular stuff. But of course, there's huge numbers, but you know, I think we're assaulted by our culture, by our kind of the ways we're taught to solve problems. It's coming at us from all sides, and a lot of it is, you know, like my brother was an est, and always told that there are these old tapes, you know, and all you have to do is get rid of your old tapes, and you can get rid of your old tapes by walking on hot coals or doing something that's gonna break through them. And I'm sure these people do some good, you know, like it helps some people. Tony Robbins, I saw, you know, a man who had been somehow in a freak accident. He became a quadriplegic or paraplegic, and he felt like a victim, and he had a wife, and he had them jumping skydiving out of planes, and they, you know, claimed that freedom, you know, it might have, you know, but it's very counterintuitive in this culture to just say the best I can do is just leave, get some space sometimes around this.
Yeah, well, that
issue, I mean, problems, stuckness that maybe won't go away.
It goes away if you train. Okay. That's the point.
More.
Not more, completely. That's. I mean, this isn't kind of. Yeah. There's no qualification. I mean, there's really nothing there. The person who's quadriplegic. Yeah, those things, I'm sure, would be helpful. You know, I mean, sure. You know, you have people do things. It takes them out of their situation. It, you know, they're going to get a relief from being by doing something like skydiving. I'm sure, you know, could be very liberating if you weren't, like I would be, completely terrified. But, you know, you'd have to push me off the plane, I'm sure. Because I'm one of those people who get up on the diving boards and walk back down. You know, I would kind of get on the 10-foot board, look down, think, no. But they work, but they're not really a solution. I mean, you know, those type of things don't, you know, solve anything. I mean, they give you a relief, they feel good, but they don't actually solve, you know, convert anything in any fundamental way. Just like, if you want to do something for a weekend, that's probably, you know, some of those things are kind of helpful for a weekend. But, you know, how do you actually transform your life? This is a huge task. So to transform the stuck bits, you really have to work at it and keep working at it and keep working at it. So this is the same reason why if I see some of you 20 years from now, you know, probably you're still going to be working on your stuck bits. You know, I'd be surprised, you know, I'd be shocked if any of you, I don't got anything more. You know, I did it, Kinray. You know, I'm fully liberated. But it makes a huge difference because as we train, we make more space around it. It's just like, and it is making more space and being less stuck when somebody, instead of completely getting to you, bothers you, but it's not a huge problem. You know, and you have to look at all of this as a continuum rather than how do I, and all I'm doing is defining the problem and the training can convert the whole problem. It is actually the only solution to the problem. You know, if we don't want to ever see what we're holding on to, we can never, you know, what we're often asking for, like Tony Robbins, is a miraculous way of doing something to convert our heart from whole thinking, like, wow, I shouldn't, it's like, I'll let that go of all the past stories, but I'm still generating stories right now. So all I have to do is get a hard situation now, like somebody being really critical of me unfairly, and I'll just have a new bad story to, because I'm not actually at that point where I'm not going to keep doing it. And plus, it's actually hard to let go of the old stories when you're in any fundamental way. There's no easy solution. In fact, it often takes, one of the points I guess I'm making is it actually takes a long time just to see where you're stuck. Because often it's not like it's consciously I'm holding on to all this stuff. Most of it is sort of almost built in the fiber of what we think of as ourself. And it's hard to kind of see that I don't have to be this way. And actually, there's choices that are doing this. And of course, it's going to take a huge amount of work to convert those choices. But I can sit still and I can find the place where none of it matters and everything I want is flowing in. And we have to trust where the training takes us, or else we can't really let go of the stuck places, because we have to trust there's an unstuck place that actually is our real home. It's where our deepest heart longs for. The same way as hopefully in a Dharma talk occasionally, you get a sense that this is where my heart wants to go. Not just my head thinking, wow, I should let things go. But something in us says, no, I want to be. In a way, I sense that there's something much more that I can find. You know, that the Buddha is calling me and there's something deeper calling me than just my stuck places.
So it's like with the woman whose baby died, you know, which is a truly traumatic event in anybody's life and somebody close to them. That's, for her, that was all a reality. She was,
oh yeah,
that was everything. And then she was able, by going around and talking to all her neighbors, to realize that that was also a reality for them, but it wasn't all of reality. I mean, yeah. It's always going to be a painful spot, probably, in her life.
Oh, yeah.
When something happens that reminds her of her baby, she's going to feel pain, but in the whole of her life, it's going to be one moment, and, you know, it's natural that she's going to feel that pain, but then you go on with your life, and there's so much more than just that pain.
And in a way, in facing the karma, you can actually open your heart to the real truth that's there, that nothing was really lost. You know, and that actually means, you know, nothing's really happening in a deeper sense. In the stillness and fullness of our hearts, it can embrace everything and it won't be hurt. And in a way, the woman probably faced that, because she had a awakening. So she kind of, when she let go of that, it opened our heart to what is much deeper. And, you know, we have to kind of see that, you know, we just have to see what we're holding on to and kind of keep pointing our mind there. And over time, it'll change the way that we feel, just like she'll can feel it without it being a problem, just something painful that's not like there's something wrong, which was what her mind was telling, you know, and our heart was feeling like this is unacceptable reality. How could God, you know, in our culture do that? Why people have come up to me and asked me, why did this happen to them? You know, and of course, look around, you know, why does anybody have cancer? Why does, you know, it's like, you know, why does anything happen to anybody? It's just all around you. You never ask why somebody else is sick. You know, why, you know, the fact that you're always, you know, there's babies dying all the time. You know, it's kind of so we have to keep kind of coming back and trusting and working with where we are and trying to be open and trying to redirect our feelings to the Dharma by being still. You know, the still heart and mind isn't reacting to the karma and can see it for what it is. Kind of when you stop telling yourself something, you look around, it's everywhere. You know, and that's an interesting thing. You know, it's like you think, wow, you know, people will always, you know, be stuck with something, and it's almost like something special has happened to them. And I kind of go, no, actually, look around. You know, Wow, I had awful parents. Wow. Do you want me to tell you about some awful... Not that mine were, but, you know, I've listened to enough. You know, I can top yours. I can, you know, somebody has a health problem. I can top it. You know, I can come up with people who will make you be grateful you have that problem and not this other problem. You have a difficult family member? I'll tell you about somebody, you know, who has like a schizophrenic son or something and, you know, you just... You know, and it'll make whatever you have seem kind of like, wow, I would trade.
I'm kidding. I'm just thinking about how, for myself, one of my huge stuck places, and many people here know that, have been around my sisters and their lives, which are, I have two sisters that have, their lives are filled with drug and alcohol and AIDS and mental illness, and recently a lot of Sangha, many Sangha members, I mean, people kindly ask me how, and they feel like they know my sisters, how are your sisters doing? And it's like just amazing because the circumstances of their lives have not changed at all, and in some ways, I mean, some things have gotten better, some things have gotten worse, and it's just pretty profound because I just say they're doing okay. And I mean, my heart feels that they're doing okay, which has been the remarkable transformation for me because after 60 years, I mean, I've become kind of unstuck in that area. It's testimony to the training for me.
Yeah, well, thank you. And that's, I mean, you can do, it's a lot of these things are really hard. Like, you know, it's understandable. I mean, we have compassion for things, it's understandable, you know. I mean, if I had a dreadful illness, I probably would get stuck. You know, I don't think I would. I'll smile. Great, Kimberly. You know, I'm going to have chemo tomorrow, you know. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, kind of with somebody, one of the monks, and have to actually put up a new transfer of merit for her. But, you know, she just, a monk in England who just had a bone marrow transplant. And, you know, and is feeling awful, mostly from what they had to do to her before, because they have to knock out your whole immune system before the bone marrow. And so she's apparently doing okay, but she's feeling, which means she's feeling horrific.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the scheme of it, that's actually okay. And you just realize, okay, this is all, you know, it's understandable. A lot of things are hard, but how do we create more space and trust in the end, which we have to take into our heart? That in the end, what matters is the life of Buddha and nothing will impact us. That's our real life. The Buddha embraces us. What is Buddha calls to Buddha. What is real is calling to us, and the call is not going to be affected by ill health, by actually birth and death. Something's calling all our karma home, and something's embracing all that karma. And we have to kind of trust that and realize it's wherever we are, it's okay. What's the real thing that's going on is going. Anyway, I think I'll finish.